So the rough and tumble of Parliament continues, up, down, over and across. Anyone who would say we know where we're going would be absolutely fooling us. Let me speak to Jamie DeLargy. Jamie, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
Jamie, just with regards to the economy, unionists and loyalists are very clear that they don't want anything coming through that would compromise the union in any way. But if we were able to just look at it without putting a political lens in, is it possible that economically in Northern Ireland we could be better off? We heard the Prime Minister over the weekend saying it was a great deal for Northern Ireland, the Leader of the Opposition referring to Northern Ireland getting something special, the Leader of the Scottish Nationalists going on about how well Northern Ireland was doing out of this, Plaid Cymru made reference to Northern Ireland and so on and so forth. But those representing Northern Ireland have clearly turned their back on it. But is it primarily for political reasons and not for economic reasons?
Well, I think there's a genuine concern about the costs that companies now may face in Northern Ireland selling into Great Britain. And there has been this a risk assessment carried out by the government. And it does contain some things which may alarm some people, and it does talk about the uncertainty may affect business investment, reducing the incentive to invest in the UK, and customers may decide to delay spending because of uncertainty over pricing changes, because they don't really know what they're going to be paying in the future. They don't know whether it's going to be EU rates or are they going to end up paying GB rates. So these are concerns that people legitimately have. Now, it has to be said that in this report, which the government issued, which I've been reading, it does say that these risks, the risks that people could face, additional costs, the risks that business could face, new hurdles, that could be mitigated. In other words, could be reduced through government action. So, and indeed, the paper is really tentative in its language. You know, it may happen, and of course, then you might think, well, it may not happen. So, there is a concern out there. There's also this revelation that, you know, there's going to be paperwork and sending goods from Northern Ireland to Great Britain, and an alarming figure that turned out is that in the past, the UK, a cost of a customs declaration could be as much as £56 if it was sending something to the rest of the world. And in theory, because we would be effectively, to all intents and purposes, in the EU, and the UK would be the rest of the world, that we might face charges of that nature. But the document goes on to say it may not be possible to translate that number, the £56, into the cost of movements from Great Britain to Northern Ireland. So there is, or between Northern Ireland. So there, to some extent, we're seeing these scares that are being raised, and at the same time, the government is saying, "Look, you know, it may not be quite the way it looks." So that's on the negative side, and these are genuine concerns.
Okay, just on that, Jamie. It's incredibly negative. Everything you've said so far would make any wise person think, "Jeepers, that's a very bad deal from a business person in Northern Ireland. It's an economic disaster."
Yeah, well, they might think that, but they have to remember that it is ringed about with these caveats that it may happen, and that in any case they may do things to lessen the effect of it. So I think it's one of those things where we're going to have to wait and see. But look, I don't deny it. I mean, Brexit, no matter what form you have, and this one seems to be a comfort to a lot of people, it does bring costs. And the only way to avoid those costs would be not to have Brexit in the first place.
Okay, but let's concentrate on we're having Brexit. Let's concentrate on this deal, because that's what we're talking about. Where's the positive for Northern Ireland as opposed to the rest of the UK?
Well, then looking at the positive side, we will, to all intents and purposes, effectively be within the EU. Therefore, we can have free trade down to the south. Well, that basically means free trade to the rest of the EU. So that might make us, and actually will make us, an attractive place to locate business. So that's a very positive thing. That could very well increase the amount of the number of jobs that are being created in Northern Ireland. And again, I know that you maybe don't want me to look at the negative side, but it prevents the fact that we will have free trade north to south, south to north, means we will avoid the hard border and all the checks that would have been associated with it, and the costs that would have been associated with it, and we would have been firmly then within the whole the UK, which then is facing all sorts of risks because we don't know what sort of trade deal the UK would be doing, the rest of the UK would be doing with the EU, and indeed with countries around the world. So whereas there are these uncertainties in terms of GBNI trade, the fact of the matter is that we have some certainty because of our position effectively continuing within the EU. So, you know, in some respects, we are there is a greater attraction for investment, which is looking to come to the UK, and then it looks to Northern Ireland and sees the benefits of Northern Ireland's position having this access, this unfettered access to the EU market.
Okay, do stay with me there, Jimmy, because I want to speak to Dr. Esmond Burney as well. Esmond, good morning.
Good morning.
And do you believe that there is the option, and supporters of the Brexit deal certainly believe that it will make Northern Ireland maybe uniquely attractive destination for foreign direct investment? It'll retain a privileged access to both the UK and the EU single market. Is that a realistic option with Boris's deal?
Well, some people have certainly argued that, and I can to a limited extent see what they ground that upon. But I have to say I've got severe doubts when we get down into the finer detail. And I think, unfortunately, one of the problems about all of this is that at a high level, certain things have been presented as quite attractive. But when you do go down into the detail, either the government, the London government, is unable to give any costing figures at all, and that was revealed on Monday night when they produced the official so-called impact assessment about these changes. You go to the table to see the impact on Northern Ireland, and it repeatedly says, we cannot quantify this. Now, I just think that is very challenging to put forward a very ambitious, very far-reaching policy change, and then say, well, we don't have the data to quantify this. So it is a bit of a leap in the dark. But more specifically to your question, Frank, in terms of the comments that Jamie was making there, some of which I did hear, I think one of the challenges in all of this is, yes, certainly, and I take Jamie's point about maintaining frictionless trade from Northern Ireland to the Republic of Ireland and back again, and indeed the wider EU, but the cost that has been imposed in the most recent Johnson proposals is that it's looking as though our trade will not be unfettered in either direction across the Irish Sea, the trade within the United Kingdom between Northern Ireland and Great Britain. So, for example, the revelation again, which came out in Parliament somewhat unwillingly on the part of the Brexit Secretary Steve Barclay, that there are these forms called exit declarations which North Anford will be obliged probably to make relating to seaborne traffic from North Ireland to Great Britain. Also,
yeah, Jamie touched on that at the beginning of his conversation, Esmond, yeah. And you see that like he was highlighting it. You see that as a real stumbling block.
Well, it's hard to say at this stage. It potentially could be, and I suppose there has to be the concern that there may be other things hidden, as it were, the woodwork, which are yet to emerge. What I was also going to go on to say is if we look at movement of goods in the opposite direction from Great Britain to Northern Ireland, £10.5 billion worth of goods are imported every year into Northern Ireland from Great Britain, as compared to 2.6 billion coming up the road, as it were, from the Republic of Ireland to Northern Ireland. So we import four times more from Great Britain than we do from Southern Ireland. I would be very concerned about the administrative costs on this system, whereby to some extent, and the extent of this also remains very unclear at this stage, Northern firms and purchasers importing, as it were, from Great Britain will be obliged to pay the European Union's tariff or tax. Now, the Prime Minister's talked about a waiver, a rebate system, but we have no details about that. We've got very little certainty. We don't know how it will work. We don't know how quickly it will work. We don't know about the costs of setting it up. No doubt it will require some sort of IT digital solution. Previous public sector IT procurements haven't always worked to time, and sometimes they haven't even worked at all. They've generally cost overrun. What would be the cost to the firms themselves? And then in the medium term, what happens to us as customers and the shops? Would we find that there is sort of a cost penalty, that the price of our groceries go up because food wholesalers and distributors are finding there's more hassle in bringing these inputs into Tesco or Lidl or wherever from the English Midlands? There may be changes in the choice of products we face in the shops. We may find increasingly retailers, for example, say to themselves, well, if there's any hassle, as it were, on importing from Liverpool to Belfast or Cairn Ryan to Belfast, we'll just, as it were, source our food products from the Republic and the rest of the European Union. Now, some customers may be happy enough about that, but it could represent a reduction, a genuine reduction in consumer choice.
Is it almost impossible to analyse it without seeing it through a political lens?
Well, to be honest, it probably is. But then that's not unique to this question of economic policy. Almost any question of economic or social policy gets mixed in with politics. And what I would always say about this is, like Jamie, I've commentated about economics for a long time now. What you've got to do is look at evidence and statistics. And of course, everybody carries their own personal political biases, and they're entitled to have them, of course, in a free society. But we can sort of test the relative likelihood of various things by looking, hopefully carefully, at the evidence. And one of the things that does concern me about the existing government proposals is the extent to which, perhaps inevitably and understandably, they've been rushed through very much. Therefore, we're making an enormous leap into new arrangements, and we know very little. In fact, sometimes we know nothing at all about the finer administrative details of how the new processes will actually work, or indeed whether they'll work at all.
Do you believe, finally, Esmond Burney, that it's a better deal, Boris's deal, the deal that he struck with the European Union that he still can't get through, it's a better deal for the Republic of Ireland than it is for Northern Ireland?
It's hard to say. There are certain advantages in it, in that the Republic of Ireland government, and I can understand where they're coming from, were previously very concerned about any sort of friction between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. Now, I think there might have been ways of dealing with that. And certainly, I think there are ways of dealing with that that didn't involve infrastructure at the border, but they had those concerns. And it's pretty clear that the Taoiseach has decided that what Boris Johnson is now offering deals with that. So in a relative sense, they probably are happier. But of course, there's the bigger question of how the trading relationship between the Republic of Ireland and the UK as a whole in the future is handled. And I think one of the things that Irish business opinion, I mean, Southern Irish business opinion is very concerned about is continuing to get free trading access to the English market, for example, for their food products. Very high percentage of Irish agriculture and food processing products go into Great Britain. And whether they continue to get that will all hinge on whatever negotiations follow, assuming UK exit does occur, follow on from that in terms of the wider free trade, long-term relationship between the UK and the European Union. And I think it's in the best interest of both countries, the UK and Ireland, that you do have as much free trade as possible. But you know, if Brexit goes badly or perhaps doesn't occur at all, but there's a lasting legacy of bitterness between the two countries, you know, that's not a good thing, both economically and obviously politically.
Dr. Esmond Burney, thank you very much indeed. Jamie, final word from you just on that question. Is it advantage Republic of Ireland? Esmond Burney could see it from many different perspectives or not.
Sorry, your question being, do I see it as being a general positive that we're in the position we are?
No, the question basically being that deal that Boris Johnson is trying to shoehorn in, is it better for the Republic of Ireland than it is for Northern Ireland economically?
Ooh, that's impossible for me to say, not having looked in some detail at what the South is likely to face and to gain from it. I think you know, it would echo his point that the South does sell a phenomenal amount of agri-produce into GB, and it will be interesting to see what the arrangements will be for that trade, and I know that is an enormous concern. Can I make a wee point about the small and micro businesses? These are companies which employ up to, say, collectively between up to 50 people in their various firms, and they are, and this is where I sort of almost like endorse what Esmond's been saying, in the sense that the costs they will face are likely to have a disproportionate effect on them compared with larger companies engaging in the same east-west trade. So these things can't be discounted. Having said that, there are a lot of small businesses, but only 1 in 7 of them actually sells goods or services to Great Britain. So actually, you know, we can exaggerate the impact that these things can have. But it really is, when you look at, you know, if I look at anything, it always has risks and opportunities, and I think there is an element of political, you know, colouring coming in here. I can look at the risks and say, oh, look at all these, look at all the downside, and you can look at exactly the same facts and absolutely, with using the same information and the same facts, say, oh, but look at all these opportunities. And I do really think that when you have a position which, as Esmond said, is replete with uncertainty, we have no idea about a lot of these things. That risk assessment document is very vague about a lot of stuff. That you are in a position where you simply, the honest thing is to say, we don't know, and we can only hope for the best. Because, put it like this, that's the way we're heading. We're heading to, I think, very definitely towards towards a Brexit based on a deal which was hammered out, essentially, I suppose, between the Prime Minister and the Taoiseach.
Well, Jamie, we started with agreement that we don't know where we're going, and we end on agreement that we don't know where we're going. We're lucky it's not an important thing, isn't it?
Exactly.
Thank you.
It's a fact that, I like that. Okay.
Jamie, thank you very much. Esmond Burney, thank you very much indeed. If you want to shine any light on it, if you can be an inspiration to us this morning, and you've got clarity, you're very welcome on this programme.